Holocaust survivor Stephen Hess will visit Albany tonight at 7:30 to speak to the public about his experiences in a talk called From Amsterdam to Westerbork to Bergen-Belsen to America, A Childhood Interrupted, and his speech will be given at the Jewish Federation Community Services Building. Stephen Hess, do you think there's a time, despite your valuable work and the work of so many others, that people will just stop understanding what this Holocaust thing was?
Well, it's always fascinating even to me that it's such a compelling topic 60 years later. But it's a nearly inexplicable event, especially it happening in or sponsored by one of the most culturally advanced countries in Europe, and aided and abetted by many other sophisticated nations in occupied Europe. So the mystery continues.
What was your story?
I'm one half of a twin. My twin sister lives in Washington, D.C. Our parents fled Nazi Germany in 1936 to Holland, thinking Holland would be safe because historically in World War One it was safe. It had not been occupied by the Germans. And, of course, to the shock of all Holland in 1940, the Nazis invaded. The real issue is that the Holocaust at that time was so unimaginable, very much like 9/11 was unimaginable on 9/10. It was a failure of the imagination. So my parents thought they were safe. For a couple of years, the Jews were in Holland were left alone. They were severely limited. They had curfews, couldn't work and go to school. In the meantime, those 2 years, the Nazis spent murdering the Jews of Eastern Europe and building the industrial killing capacity. And when that capacity was ready in about mid-1942, they started collecting the Jews of Western Europe. At that point, we were taken first to Westerbork, which was a transit center in northeastern Holland. And from there, we were taken to Bergen-Belsen, the infamous camp in northern Germany where Anne Frank and her sister were murdered. And we were there until April 1945 when we were put on a train that meandered the German countryside for 14 days and 13 nights of 2,000 Jews on the train. 675 of them died en route or shortly thereafter, and we were finally liberated in April 1945 by elements of the Russian army in an eastern German farm town.
How did you survive in the camp?
Anybody who survived was pure luck because, I mean, the Nazis condemned all the Jews to death without exception at the Wannsee Conference on January 20th, 1942. So any Jew who escaped from Nazi occupation did so only by pure luck. There wasn't time for them to kill them all. And that said, my parents were incredibly courageous, resisted with their every breath, and somebody had to survive, and we were fortunate enough to be among the very few. My sister and I were among a handful of twins to survive the camps, and among a very, very small number of children under 15 to survive the camps.
When you say it was sort of, you know, accidental that you could survive, can you sort of describe some of the ways in which you did?
Bergen-Belsen, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of concentration camps, some very small, some very well-known, and very large, but there were six death camps, which were industrial killing centers. They were all in Poland. The difference was that the killing centers had gas chambers it's hard to use the word good fortune, but for whatever reason, we were sent to Bergen-Belsen. Had my family been sent to the east, where most of the Dutch Jews were sent, we would have survived. My sister and I would have been dead within 4 hours of arrival because all children under 15 approximately were murdered upon arrival in the death camp. So we were sent to Bergen-Belsen, which was not a killing center per se. About 50,000 people died in Bergen-Belsen, but they died from starvation, neglect, and disease. But disease, you know, is a little more choosy, and we were among the few to make it. Bergen-Belsen was survivable to a point until late 1944, when the remnants of the surviving Jews were driven by the Nazis from Auschwitz, which was being overrun by the Russians, and were were sent on a death march to Bergen-Belsen. Most of them died en route. When they arrived, and this included Anne Frank and her sister Margot, when they arrived in Bergen-Belsen, the camp became so overcrowded, the entire infrastructure, such as it was, collapsed. And just to point out just how deadly that camp became, after the British liberated Bergen-Belsen on April 15, 1945, an additional 13,000 people died in the camp who were just too weak to save.
Well, did you ever have a sense that you would like to take some revenge somehow?
Well, I was in my adult years, sure. I mean, at the time, my sister and I were blessedly young in the sense that, well, we starved with the rest and we were cold with the rest. We didn't have the psychological certainty that any hour and any day might be our last. I mean, we were children. When I was an adult and used to travel to Germany on business, it was very difficult for the first few years. But that said, you know, the present generation in Germany or grandchildren and great-grandchildren of perpetrators, they can't be held responsible. And the Nazis are dead, at least the ones from World War II. Some of their offspring are still around.
But you don't see national character. We used to debate that in college. You know, that the Germans
have
national
character. Well,
I know,
I've taught history, and one of the first things I learned from my esteemed professors at Columbia, that there's no such thing as national character. But, you know, common sense tells you, it isn't so. You know, the Germans certainly have a militaristic tradition and of course, tremendous achievement. But I think it's interesting to observe that Italy, which was, of course, allied with Germany, had absolutely no taste for the murder of Jews, and yet they were Hitler's allies. It wasn't until Mussolini was overthrown and the Germans invaded Italy that the final solution reached Italy. So you'd have to conclude that, you know, that there's something going on as when it comes to national character.
Was there one guard or person who really became the devil for you?
Only in memory. I mean, only in my father wrote his memoir or a document on his experience in 1946, which I have. I mean, again, I was a child, and everything I learned was from reading and from talking to my mother for years and getting facts and making sure my facts were correct. But the devil incarnate in Bergen-Belsen was a man named Joseph Kramer, who was the commandant. But even the capos, which were prisoner trustees, were extremely brutal. And my father in 1946 was asked by the British to testify against a capo named Siglinski. And he went back to Germany to Lüneburg and testified against this prisoner who terribly abused and murdered other prisoners, and he was convicted and hanged.
Well, it seems to me there's always that moment when you're walking down the street and you see somebody, you know, who really was a terrible person, and you say, well...
Oh, that actually happened. This man, Siglinski, had a 16-year-old Dutch girlfriend in the camp, and after the war in 1946, he came to Amsterdam to meet up with this girlfriend, and he was recognized and arrested. So in the early years that happened, but of course, you know, now they're all gone.
Holocaust survivor Stephen Hess will visit Albany at 7:30 at the Jewish Federation Community Services building to speak to the public about his experiences. The talk is called From Amsterdam to Westerbork to Bergen-Belsen to America, A Childhood Interrupted. Well, Stephen Hess, thank you so much for giving us this time. It's always just something that gets to one's soul when one hears about this terrible point in human depravity we call the Holocaust.
Thank you, Alan, and this is why I love America.